Hi, welcome to Civic's Change Agent Chat, episode 23. During these chats, we speak with change agents who are working to create a better healthcare system for us all. I'm Stephanie Spriggs with the Center for Improving Value in Healthcare, or as we like to call it, Civic. In this chat, Taman Osborne Roberts, Civic's former CMO, is speaking with Emily Hamad, a student at the University of Colorado Denver's Department of Behavioral Sciences. Emily used co-APCD data to investigate whether a patient's socioeconomic status or health insurance plan affected their access to potentially life-saving but expensive genetic testing. This project combines co-APCD data and data from the Colorado Central Cancer Registry. During this chat, we learn what Emily discovered and why Colorado was an ideal place to conduct this study. We recorded this chat in October 2018. Thanks for listening and enjoy the chat.
Hello, everyone, and thank you once again for joining us here at Civic's Change Agent Chat. For those of you who have not seen me here before, I'm Taman Osborne Roberts, and I'm Civic's Chief Medical Officer. Before we get started, as always, there are just a few housekeeping items that I want to mention. First of all, the phone lines are muted, and we will be using the Q&A feature to field questions and allow you to make comments on the discussion. In that feature will be answered during the Q&A session towards the end of the chat. However, despite that, please, if you have a question, go ahead and put it in. We'll get you in the queue, and we'll work to get those all answered, provided we have time. In addition, this webinar is being recorded and will be posted to the Civic site, so you can access this information again at any time without cost. Today, we'll be speaking with Emily Hamad, a student at the University of Colorado's Health and Behavioral Science Department and a doctoral candidate. Emily, would you be so kind as to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you?
That pretty much sums it up. My name is Emily Hamad Mareg, and I'm a doctoral candidate in the Department of Health and Behavioral Science, which is an interdisciplinary department. We bring together anthropologists, social scientists, epidemiologists to create really innovative research.
Okay, fantastic. You know, sounds like a very, very interesting sort of a department. So, you know, why don't you tell us a little bit about the project and your inspiration for it? Where did the idea to look at this particular series of questions come from? Tell us a bit about the questions.
Yeah, so I think it's really helpful just to start with a story from one of the patients that I worked with actually in my master's thesis work, and which really inspired me to look into this issue a little bit deeper. And the story is about Christy. She is a woman who was diagnosed with breast cancer. And when she was diagnosed, she had a lot of concern about just making decisions. She had to make a lot of decisions right away. And one in particular, deciding between a more invasive bilateral mastectomy surgery to remove her breast cancer tissue, or a less aggressive lumpectomy surgery. And she felt really conflicted about making the right decision, wanted to avoid future recurrence. And so her oncologist recommended that she undergo genetic testing to help give her some more information, feel more empowered and informed in making this kind of decision. Christy thought that sounded like a great idea. However, when she got the coverage decision back from her health insurance payer, they said that they were not going to cover the cost of testing. So she felt really, really frustrated by the process. She wanted to make a decision quickly, couldn't afford to pay for it out of pocket because genetic testing is very expensive, but also didn't want to go through a lengthy appeals process. And so what I found was that this is a common experience across breast cancer patients. And so that was part of what inspired me to look more closely at this issue of the role of health insurance plan, so PPO, HMO, Medicaid, et cetera, and looking at it within this relationship between somebody's socioeconomic status and access to genetic testing. And so that's really what the data that's really part of what inspired using this data. And previously we didn't have the ability to look at this issue more carefully, look at how specific types of plans did or did not confer access to something, to, in this case, genetic testing. And so that was really what was really compelling and exciting about having access to the all-payer claims data, was that I could finally study this issue from a quantitative standpoint and look at what it looks like from a population rather, and so bringing together some of these qualitative data that I previously collected.
Yeah, no, so it sounds like, you know, really you were able to look at this question in a more complex way than, you know, really has been previously possible. Because, you know, oftentimes, you know, these sorts of looks into studies will be done with a single data source that's maybe a little more narrow or doesn't have as many possible elements in it. You know, for say, you know, retrospectives and clinical records or, you know, those sorts of things. But it sounds like you were really able to get a wealth of data on a whole bunch of different things coming in at once. Could you talk a little bit about, you know, what you learned in your study? And as you do, could you discuss maybe some examples where that complexity came into play?
Yeah, absolutely. So you hit the nail on the head. The ability to really look at some of the finer details of health insurance claims as they play out from a breast cancer patient's experience was really, really valuable. And I find myself constantly finding different kinds of research questions that can even come out of the data that I already have. But what I have found really is supports this idea that there certainly are differences in terms of proportion of patient covered across different types of payer plans, PPO, HMO, you know, there are differences among even public health plans, Medicaid, Medicare. But more interestingly is the ability to look at this over time and to see, especially with the new technology, to see how it diffuses into clinical practice and what that looks like from an insurance coverage standpoint. One thing that came out of the data that I was surprised by, but I shouldn't have been surprised by, was the ability to see how the data overlays with historical events. For example, looking at trends in access to genetic testing prior to the Supreme Court decision in 2013 that made gene patents illegal, we saw, you know, kind of, we saw increasing access, you know, very kind of slow increasing access of genetic testing across all types of payers. However, after the Supreme Court decision in 2013, you see this dramatic increase across all types of payers, really because the genetic test, the price came down now that more laboratories were able to offer testing, there were more types of testing. So you saw, you know, increased access across the board. But then as new forms of genetic tests came into the market that became then again more expensive, we sort of go back to some of the trends that we saw prior to 2013 in terms of the differences that can be seen across specific plans. For example, richer, more comprehensive plans, plans where there's a lower deductible, you're going to see more individuals being covered or having access to genetic testing, versus plans that might have a higher deductible and maybe less comprehensive in coverage.
Got it. So it sounds like you're able to really leapfrog past some of the traditional considerations. Not, you know, is this test good? And, you know, not is this something, you know, we should do. You're really moving past that into, even if this is a, you know, a good, well-validated, you know, evidence-based test, is this test happening? And if it is happening or not happening, you know, really what are some of the reasons? What are some of the factors that, you know, create not just access, but use, you know, true access, if you will, you know, not, you know, access in name only. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yeah, absolutely. It really is, you know, so many times health insurance policies on paper in their coverage policy explanations will say that, you know, a genetic test will be covered for this individual based on these factors. However, we've never before been able to really see how that translates into clinical practice. That wasn't possible prior to having claims data available. We could make predictions based on, you know, or we could do smaller studies that were more qualitative in nature where you needed to interview patients, like, did you actually get access? But nothing on a larger scale. And so to really be able to look at what the policies say, how do they actually translate, that is something that's really innovative, I think. And I think really compelling about this kind of research.
No, I agree with you. This is, you know, really, really a powerful tool, a powerful model that you're developing to really look at these sorts of things. I'm wondering, how do you anticipate this is going to be translated into change on the ground with clinicians and their practices, with administrators, with policymakers, with business people and folks at plans? You know, how do you really see this being used? Because I could imagine there are a lot of ways it could be.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. So there's a couple of ways that I can see it being used. One is First is doing a cost-effective analysis of access of genetic testing, because right now insurance policy policies are basically written with the idea that this technology is expensive, and so it needs to be shown to be efficacious in clinical practice. And so, you know, there's a lot of hesitation in covering this for across all breast cancer patients because they want to see that efficacy is in place. If we can do a cost-effective analysis and show that this is a cost-effective technology for breast cancer patients, then that sort of helps to make that argument to health insurance payers that this is worth covering for newly diagnosed patients. So that's one way. The second way is to also help inform and consider how health insurance policies can be created to create equitability. Because again, my research is really looking at this from a social economic status, health disparity standpoint. And so thinking about what, how policies can be reimagined, re-envisioned to create more equitable access across all types of patients, depending on the health insurance plan. And so I think we need to be really thoughtful when we're developing health insurance policies that we're reaching every aspect of the population. And then third is thinking about how physicians can use this information, how physicians can have an awareness of, you know, there's a lot of literature that shows that physicians are aware oftentimes of what their patients' health insurance might be. And if they are, they might make decisions or might make recommendations based on that knowledge. And so even just bringing an awareness to that conversation about how they're choosing to make recommendations to patients can be really beneficial in terms of, you know, ensuring equitability in this case to genetic testing for their patients.
Oh, that all makes a lot of sense. And it sounds like, you know, oftentimes when we talk about issues of disparity and equity, there's, at least in my experience, there's you know, been kind of this background noise of, well, that's nice, but, you know, can you show me the numbers? Otherwise, this looks like kind of more of a charity sort of a thing we're doing. And it sounds like you can really start digging into cost and quality and, mm-hmm. and a lot of, you know, just real hard quantified outcomes with this. And that's part of the power of this.
No, absolutely. And I think, again, you know, harkening back to this story that I shared earlier about Christy, you know, I've heard a lot of these stories, not just from patients themselves, but from clinicians who felt frustrated, you know, wanting to be able to implement some of these new technologies that are available, but the awareness that, you know, not every health insurer is going to cover them. And so there's a hesitation, a reservation about even offering them. And so, you know, I've heard these stories for quite a long time, and I'm using that data to support what I'm seeing with the quantitative data. But certainly it's really empowering when you have, again, you know, it's very effective when you can show this on a larger scale. And that's really what this data is enabling me to do for my work and my research.
Oh, got it. You know, and something else that comes up, at least in my mind, as I think about this, is that this particular direction of research that you're looking at, you know, I'm sure it could be done with a variety of conditions, but breast cancer is particularly an interesting one to do here in Colorado for a range of reasons. Mm-hmm. You know, would you mind talking a little bit about, you know, perhaps why this is particularly interesting to Colorado and what some of the reasons might be?
Yeah, so absolutely. You're right. So Colorado has an interesting, there are certain populations that are considered to be higher risk for genetic variation, genetic mutations that can, that we're testing for with a lot of these genetic tests. However, it's come to light in recent, really, really decades that there's particular populations, especially in the San Luis Valley in rural southern parts of Colorado, that actually have higher rates of hereditary forms of breast cancer than we previously understood. And our epidemiology around the genetics on breast cancer is changing, and we're starting to get a better sense of what this looks like in certain populations. This population is certainly one of them. However, because they're rural, because they're oftentimes have a lower income and lower access to health insurance, and health insurance is the gatekeeper to this expensive technology. There's serious issues related to access in these communities and in these areas. And so I think that my research in general, I mean, it is really aimed at looking at access specifically. And so the opportunities to be able to see how rural San Luis Valley varies from, you know, urban Denver in terms of access, in terms of opportunities to treat is a compelling opportunity, but also in terms of, again, health outcomes, because we know that they have poor health outcomes of breast cancer from breast cancer illness in these rural areas, particularly San Luis Valley. And so I think it contributes, that means that this research contributes to a number of where areas, not just looking at access and what this looks like in terms of access to genetic testing, but also, again, understanding the epidemiology and the incidence of genetic mutations across the population, which is something that we need to be developing from a clinical standpoint.
No, yeah. And I could imagine, you know, perhaps, you know, analyses over time looking at this saying, okay, well, maybe we have multiple clusters of areas where people have, you know, higher than average incidences, but our outcomes are different and our outcomes for, you know, testing and final outcomes are different. So what are the differences between these areas and how might, you know, that be teased out or contribute?
Well,
to that end, go on.
I was just going to add to that if we can show that if by increasing access in these areas that we do improve health outcomes, again, I think that adds to the story of, you know, why this access to this technology can be such a benefit for cancer patients.
Absolutely. You change the diagnostic story from I'm so sorry to there's really some things we can do and let's help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, take on that. So to that end, could you talk a little bit more about where else you see this research going in the future? I mean, clearly this is a very, very powerful way of looking at things, and I anticipate there's questions here to occupy you and others for a very long time. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So as I mentioned earlier, the data that I have, the All Payer Claims data, is really rich and robust. I think that there's certainly it will keep me very occupied for a while, looking at what this looks like across different types of technology and especially new types of chemotherapy, new chemotherapies, biopharmaceuticals that cancer patients are using. Again, seeing if these trends hold, I would predict that what's happening with BRCA testing, it's been in place clinically for a longer time than some of these new biomedical technologies that are coming into practice. I would imagine that this is a strong predictor for what this looks like across different types of technology. And I'm really using it as a case study of what new technology, of how this technology diffuses into practice. And so, again, I think it's important to substantiate my findings by looking at different types of technology. I also think it's really interesting because it is genetics, and it does have implications for other family members. And thinking about how access to this can be, how this can play out for other family members. What are the intergenerational effects of access to testing for families? And so we can, again, build on payer claims data as the payer claims data becomes more robust and includes a larger portion of the population. We can foreseeably make some of these familial studies and look at these quantitatively and then also look at them, again, from a patient qualitative standpoint.
Got it. Well, you know, I think this has been incredibly interesting and incredibly promising, and you know, you're doing some really fantastic things. You know, if it'd be okay, I'd like to move to some questions that we've been getting online, if that's
sure.
All right.
Sure.
So let's see. Looks like we have one question so far. I'd like to encourage everyone to write them in if you have them. But the first question is, are there any cost efficacy studies being conducted or that have been conducted to your knowledge? And if not, would the Colorado All Payer Claims Database be a resource for data for that type of return on investment analysis to show costs for people who do and do not get the genetic testing?
So, great question. No, assertively. I've certainly seen cost-effective analyses done for genetic testing not in Colorado, and on a much smaller population basis, again, not using payer claims data. I can't remember I want to say that it might have been the SEER data, but it was a different data set that was publicly available. So nothing that could be as robust as what would be offered through the payer claims data, which is again. What I would be doing with my cost effective analysis is I've linked this data to census data and to the Colorado Central Cancer Registry data, which is where I would get my outcomes over time. And so that's where the cost-effective analysis. So again, I feel that by using the All Payer Claims data, you know, in association with these other data sets, I've created sort of an innovative and novel opportunity. But absolutely, it's possible, and it's not just possible with genetic testing, but for hopefully these other types of technology as well. I think you can make arguments for cost-effective analyses there.
Got it. So, you know, really this model can be widened to a range of not simply conditions, but a range of different interventions in ways.
Right.
Yeah,
and I think that's where policy change, I mean, as much as I wish that I could just share a bunch of stories like Christie's and hope that policy health payers would change policies, you know, I think that by showing them the dollars and cents and knowing, you know, they're driven by these actuarial perspectives on creating policy, which makes sense, they're in the business of insurance, I think that that really is what will be the most compelling part of this in terms of real policy change and effective immediate policy change. However, I think generally from abroad outside of just health payers, I think you can use this data to make really compelling arguments as well for other policymakers in terms of why this is important to healthcare.
And I'll say for my part, I very much agree with you, and I'm just so happy and so grateful that you're working on this for particularly communities in deep need in Colorado and finding some incredible tools for us to use to actually make the world a better place. That's really, really incredible. So do you have any final thoughts in conclusion?
No, I mean, I would encourage anybody who's listening or out there, if you have questions about the research or you just want to know more about my experience, you know, I'm always happy to chat more offline. So I love to be a resource for the community and other researchers in particular. So, and I just appreciate this opportunity. It's always great. As a dissertation student, it's always exciting to be able to share our research. So this is just a really cool and innovative forum to be able to do that. So I'm really thankful for the opportunity.
And we're thankful to you for the opportunity to speak with us today, to share what you're doing, and to talk about really how APC data has informed everything that you're doing. And with that, we've really come to the end of an incredibly wonderful discussion. Again, thank you so much for spending time with us. I wanted to let everybody know who's joined us, thank you as well, to listen to Emily's insights and the incredible things that she's doing. Did want to let you know that the recording of this discussion will be shared via social media and the Civic website in the coming days. And, you know, as Emily says, you'll have an opportunity, I believe, to contact her on our from information on our site to be able to discuss in more detail if you're interested. One last housekeeping bit, which is that our next chat is Tuesday, November 6th, when we'll be chatting with Dr. Indira Lenig from the Lenig Family Fund about her research into spinal cord injuries. And that will be yet another interesting topic. Thank you, Emily, for joining us. Thank you, everybody else, for joining us, and have a great day.